Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knowles Show.
On health and healing and living a longer and happier life. From the Pennsylvania State University comes a study about prunes. And prunes, they're saying, well, one a day or up to six a day can help keep inflammation at bay. According to the university, a study of postmenopausal people suggests eating nutrient-rich prunes every day can be beneficial to bone health, reducing inflammation factors that contribute to osteoporosis. Now, previous research has shown that polyphenol extracts of plant compounds that act as antioxidants and reduce inflammation that are in prunes promote lower levels of oxidative stress and inflammation in a type of bone cell called osteoclast. And in this study, researchers explored the effects of prunes on bone health after menopause. Now, why is that important? Because after menopause, probably 90% of women suffer from any number of conditions that they didn't have a problem with before, not even in perimenopause for most of them. These include gaining weight without overeating. Why? Your metabolism slows down. So the same amount of food that you had before menopause, now that extra amount of food will cause weight gain, up to 10 pounds a year. You also have thinning of the skin. You start to notice lines that were there all along, but now they're more pronounced. Mood swings because hormones begin to become, well, changed in the body. Now, there's a myth that you no longer secrete estrogen. No, you still secrete some estrogen, just not the way you did before, not from the same organs in the body. But you also have, unfortunately, a lot of strength loss. Vitality is down, sleep problems occur, thinning of the hair, thinning of the eyebrows, especially the outer edge of the eyebrows, which frequently also shows a problem with hormones, and also thyroid gland, underactive thyroid, which is very common in my experience working with postmenopausal women. You've got to get the thyroid working. You've got to get your adrenals rejuvenated. Pantothenic acid, by the way, is one of the best things you can do. Vitamin C and pantothenic acid for your adrenals. Stress causes that. And also, bone loss is big time. In fact, I just completed a study, an anti-aging clinical study, where the oldest woman in the study was 95, and she had lost almost 15 pounds of her body weight. Most of that was in her bones. And her doctor didn't even want her in the study. Felt that just sitting on an airplane for 3 hours could cause something to break. That's how brittle her bones were. At the end of the study, she had gained all that back. At the end of the study, she no longer had osteoporosis. So something as simple as eating 50 grams, that's 2 ounces of prunes a day, 2 to 3 ounces a day, can make a big difference. Now, another study, with this one was on cardamom, and it shows promise for treating aggressive breast cancer. Yes, Florida A&M University studies show that a compound from cardamom spice can kill triple-negative breast cancer cells. Now, cardamom, as we know, is a natural compound. It's found in the spice cardamom and other plants and can have therapeutic potential for triple-negative breast cancer, according to the study, using human cancer cells. The findings also show that the compound targets a gene that helps cancer cells elude the immune system. About 10 to 15% of breast cancers are triple negative, which means that this could have an enormous benefit for those people. So, why not try it preventatively also? Just another thing you can add in that's not expensive, tasty. Cardamom is very tasty. I like to use cardamom and rosemary and fennel together in rice dishes. From the University of Michigan comes a study about a mineral supplement could help stop fatty liver progression, and that's a major disease, a major killer in the United States. And a lot of people have fatty liver. Well, just look at the American diet. It's a fatty diet. And that fat from all the oils, and by the way, top of that bad oils is cottonseed oil. And we don't need those oils, and the diet shouldn't have them, and trans fats. That all ends up in your liver, because your liver has to cleanse everything out of the body, liver and the kidneys. So all those toxins going in, well, the body's trying to get rid of them. And the liver becomes the septic system. So you want to keep it clean. Green juices, lots of vegetables, lots of green leafy vegetables will keep your liver clean and healthy. And, of course, the nutrient glutathione and alpha-lipoic acid helps with that as well. Well, the results from a preclinical study add new evidence that a multi-mineral dietary supplement, and this is called Aquamin, A-Q-U-A-M-I-N, could be a simple and effective way to reduce the long-term health consequences of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Aquamin is derived from calcified red marine algae, which, by the way, is rich in calcium, magnesium, and 72 other minerals and trace elements. Most people living in Western society do not meet the USDA requirements for the intake of calcium, magnesium. And it's amazing because the most important mineral, in my opinion, in the body is magnesium. And there's more than 115 different things that magnesium does for the heart alone. So you want magnesium. You know, the algae is important, and we don't eat algae, and we should, especially the red algae. University of Michigan, half of older adults now die with dementia diagnosis. That's up sharply. Now, here's a question for you. When you were growing up and someone in your family died, did they have dementia? Or did they die and they were okay up until, with their mind, until they had their heart attack or stroke or cancer? Today, nearly half of all older adults who die have a diagnosis of dementia listed in their medical record. That's up 36% in just 20 years. That's according to the Journal of the American Medical Association's Health Forum. This was done at the University of Michigan. They studied the data from 3.5 million people over the age of 67 who died during a 13-year period, and that's what they're finding. Well, I can give you one reason, inflammation. Inflammation is the number one cause of cancer, most of your heart conditions, stroke, diabetes, and dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS. So what can you do about it? Simple. Go on an anti-inflammatory diet, a fresh, healthy, vegan diet, plant-based diet, lots of juices. That fresh glass of orange juice you make in the morning, 16 ounces, that's flooding your body with far more vitamin C than what we ever thought. In fact, all of our studies were understating by a factor of 10, meaning having a glass of fresh orange juice in the morning can give you 10 times more the nutrient value than what we had assumed. So it's a good way to start the day. But then celery cucumber with lemon and ginger, that's another great juice as well to turn off inflammation. And vitamin C throughout the day. You don't have to take a lot, maybe 1,000 milligrams five times a day. That's 5,000 milligrams. One in the morning, one in the late afternoon, one in the early evening, one a little later and before you go to bed. Thins the blood. That helps prevent stroke. So it makes a difference. So if you can turn off the inflammation and you put on a living food diet with the supplements that can help dementia, that can make a difference as well. B-complex, 25 to 50 milligrams a day, that also helps with the brain as well, as does folic acid and vitamin B12, 1,000 micrograms or 1 milligram methylated can make a difference too with dementia. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break. Got a lot of interesting stuff coming at you, especially for you hardcore conspiracy theorists. All right? So get out your aluminum foil, put on your aluminum hat. We're going to come back. Oh, well, we're going to come back and show that the wrong people have been wearing those hats. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Baby, I got so much love to give, and I wanna give it all to you. Close the door, no need to worry no more. Let's bring this day to a pleasant end. Girl, it's me and you now.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. In this segment of our program, we're going to challenge those in the establishment, the journalist, the essayist, the opiners, those who come forward every day on every show and tell us what we should know. Now, if we decide to do our own independent research and we find something that contradicts them in their so-called truths, we're labeled conspiracy theorists. And so for decades, when people would look for truth, it wasn't the government or the media that ever gave us the truth. It was individuals who found the truth, like Daniel Ellsberg. He released the Pentagon Papers. Now, imagine over the years, it was the whistleblowers that gave us the truth, and then agencies of government or media had to tell that. But then they turned against them also, like Julian Assange told us the truth. He never lied. And yet, anyone who says, well, you know, this came not from Julian Assange, he didn't work with the Russians, they'll say, oh, that's just a conspiracy theory. No, it's not. It's fact. But nobody cares about the facts today if you're part of the problem and you lie. Do you remember an old television show, comedy? And this is a clip from it. This goes back to the 1980s. Listen to what they have to say.
Them face to face. I wanted them to admit what they were doing.
Who is they?
He was in the office of the Trilateral Commission.
Trilateral Commission?
Yeah, the Trilateral Commission.
All right, what is the Trilateral Commission?
It's an organization founded in 1973 by David Rockefeller to bring together business and political leaders from the United States, Europe, Japan, so they could work together for better economic and political cooperation between their nations.
Yeah, but that's what they'd like us to believe. But you see, what they're really up to is a scheme to plant their own loyal members in positions of power in this country, to work to erase national boundaries and create an international community, and in time, bring about a one-world government with David Rockefeller calling the shots.
I take it they're pressing charges?
Yeah, well, he broke a globe and some UNICEF artwork.
Well, they're in on it, too.
Okay, Mr. Klein, if you just...
I'm telling you, our whole way of life as we know it is in jeopardy.
I appreciate that information.
But I have the documented evidence. It's all in there. Show him.
Well, he's got these magazines here.
Conspiracy Review? Suppressed Truth Roundup?
The whole master plan is exposed.
Yeah, well,
You're still not convinced, huh? would you like to hear the names of just a few of the people who have been on the Trilateral Commission?
Not particularly.
James Earl Carter. Heard of him?
Look, Mr. Klein...
Henry Kissinger. You heard of him? Walter Mondale.
Who?
Mr. Klein, this is
John Anderson, George Bush. Now, you remember at the convention, everybody thought it was going to be Ford for Veep. You know what happened? David Rockefeller just picked up a phone, put in a call. Hey, Ronnie, forget Jerry, it's George. Bye. So, no matter who won in November, they had their man in the White House.
Are you through?
All right. Now, that, of course, was all conspiracy theories. There was no Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg Group, trying to conspire about anything, right? That's what everyone in the media and everyone in government told us. And so if you even thought that, then shame on you. Hold on. Someone actually came forward and acknowledged that. In fact, it was that same David Rockefeller that in the comedy they were saying was the creator of this. Here's what he had to say about all of the 40 years that all of those journalists from the New York Times, the Washington Post, Time Magazine, etc., had been in meetings along with other journalists, major people within the world, conspiring to create a new world order. In his own words, here's what he had to say. So,
1991 closed-door meeting of fellow internationalists, billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. That the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
That these men aim to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. In short, they seek total and quiet control. At a 1991 closed-door meeting of fellow internationalists, billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. That the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
That these men aim to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. In short, they seek total and...
It wasn't a conspiracy theory. It was conspiracy fact. Now let's jump forward today. Who took over from David Rockefeller in 19... or worked with him since 1972-73? Well, Klaus Schwab. Klaus Schwab, of course, has been grooming young politicians, policymakers for all these decades. In fact, he's doing it today. He has thousands upon thousands of these individuals, and he actually gets them where they get into major places in government. You're going to hear from Klaus Schwab directly. Don't take my word for it. And he's no longer hiding it. He's talking about a new world order. He's talking about how they're going to do it, and he's talking with people who are in that process, bankers and economists, people from BlackRock. In fact, the head of BlackRock sits on his board. And so listen in his own words now. What you're about to hear are four different lectures he was giving over a period of 2 years just a few years ago. So this is all kind of new, and one of them is at Harvard. And he asked the people in the room who've been his students to hold up their hand, and the whole room's hands are up. And then he brags in a separate clip about Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada. And he says when he met with Trudeau recently, he noticed that about half of his cabinet were people from the World Economic Forum's Young Leadership Development Corps. So, not conspiracy theory. And they're not hiding it. So listen to him. And it's exactly the same process. But when you've heard of Davos, he is Davos. The World Economic Forum controls Davos. So every year we hear about thousands of the world's top leaders, small fields, you know, like the musicians and politicians and news people and business people. They all meet there. He controls all that. He sets the agenda. And then they're to take all that information home and implement it. But you can't just change the world overnight. It takes time. Well, right now, they're going to try to change it overnight because they were given the perfect opportunity with COVID. So, all these people took advantage of it. Now they want everyone to get vaccinated, and they want you to get your vaccine passport. But on that passport will be all the other information, your banking information. They're trying to get rid of all currencies, gold, silver, dollars. So the only way you can buy anything, pay any bill, is with your card. But they can control the card. And in Canada, when Trudeau went to make his emergency measures, it said in the measures that they can control what you buy. They can cut off, and did, a person's ability to pay bills, buy food. And they were embarrassed by this since there was such a pushback that he had to rescind that. But we see where they were going. China already has this system. So now let's hear, in his own words, Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum leaders talk about how they're going to control your life. You will own nothing and you'll be happy.
Explain me a little bit about your activities and could we see you around as well? Because you have a fantastic setup here.
Of course, we can walk around. You know, we have here our headquarters. We have also offices in Beijing and in New York. What we are doing is very complex. We are a foundation bringing together the key decision makers from all walks of life to address the challenges on the global agenda. That's in an essence what we are doing.
And when did you start the World Economic Forum?
Oh, many years ago, 37 years ago, in 1971.
Because people know about the annual meeting in Davos, but it's much more than that, right?
Yes, of course, the annual meeting, which is the annual meeting of our members and constituents, 2,000 people from politics and business. That's the top of the iceberg. What we are doing here is following up many issues, providing frameworks for solutions, looking at industry agendas. We have a number of public-private partnerships, and so on and so on. A lot to do.
And so who do we have as we work, Klaus, in the different meetings? What type of stakeholders do we have, the constituencies?
Stakeholders, we have, if I look at our stakeholders, we have business, of course, as a very important audience, and we have politics, we have continuous partnerships with many governments around the world, and of course we have NGOs, we have trade unions, we have all those different parts.
Media, of course,
and very important experts and scientists and academia. Because if we are looking at the future, I think we should look at new solutions, and the new solutions will be very much driven by technological developments.
And we even have you even have religious leaders, right?
We have religious leaders, we have social entrepreneurs, very important social entrepreneurs, and we invite hundreds of those to our activities.
And you show them to the media and
exactly.
help them
yeah.
better.
We help them to create networks and through the networks to raise finance also. And another very important constituency are our young global leaders, because we feel today's problems need fresh solutions, creative solutions. They need new thinking, and you find this new thinking among the young people. Our young global leaders are selected by the top editors-in-chief around the world.
Okay. How do you think the annual meeting and the other meetings are changing and completely setting the agenda? I think that's one of
They are not setting the agenda. That has to be done by the political bodies okay. and so on. But they are shaping the agenda.
Shaping.
Which means bringing new insights, allowing people to make better decisions.
But like in, I follow you, Klaus, because the offices are truly amazing there. For example, you had Bono and Gates engage in philanthropy, right? I think it was in 2005.
No, it's not only philanthropy. You see, Davos serves also as a platform for new initiatives. So where you get the support of the world community for new initiatives. So, for example, Bono launched an initiative in 2005 to reduce the debts of African countries. And this was taken over afterwards in the G8. We have had many other initiatives like the Gavi initiative, which was launched. Gavi is a global alliance for vaccination and immunization for children, which was launched by Gates and which is now active in immunizing and vaccinating millions of children around the world. This is the purpose of what we are doing, to be a platform for new thinking, but also for action. Action mainly in terms of public-private partnership. Big corporations like Microsoft, whoever, they have a lot of advantages from the fact that the world has become global. But they also have not only rights, they have also duties. And the duty consists in contributing to a better society. And I think this has been very much recognized by Bill Gates, but also by many other people. This notion to integrate young leaders is part of the World Economic Forum since many years. And I have to say, when I mention now names like Mrs. Merkel, even Vladimir Putin and so on, they all have been young global leaders of the World Economic Forum.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are very proud of now, the young generation, like Prime Minister Trudeau, President of Argentina and so on, that we penetrate the cabinets. So yesterday I was at a reception for Prime Minister Trudeau, and I know that half of this cabinet, or even more half of this cabinet, are actually young global leaders of the World Economic
right.
Forum.
And that's true in Argentina, too. Wow.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's true in Argentina as well.
It's true in Argentina, and it's true in France now. Mm-hmm. I'm here with the president, who is a young global leader. But we, in addition to the young global leaders, we have now the global shapers in 450 cities around the world. I just wonder, is there any global shaper here? Yeah, you see global shapers here.
and The fourth industrial revolution will impact our lives completely. It will not only change how we communicate, how we produce, how we consume, it will change actually us, our own identity, and of course gives life to such policies and developments like smart traffic, smart government, smart cities. What you will see is that everything will be integrated into a ecosystem driven by big data and driven particularly by close cooperation also of governments with business, civil society. And this revolution will come at a breathtaking speed. It will be like a tsunami. And actually, it's not just a digital revolution. It's digital, of course, physical, it's nanotechnology, but it's also biological. And so three dimension provides a particular force to this revolution. So what the World Economic Forum is doing is to promote this public-private cooperation to master the fourth industrial revolution. The fourth industrial revolution will have multifold impacts. Of course, every industry will be digitalized, will be disintermediated, and has to define a new business model. But it's not only business which is affected, it's government which has to move over to agile government, it is society as a whole, with the danger of job losses, but also with the need to reskill and upskill people fast. So there's an impact on society. So we will have to prepare very well for this revolution, and I feel that the Asian countries with a relatively young population can manage and master this revolution easier compared to other countries in the world. What is particularly important is the educational system. We have to change the educational system, which is still very much anchored. Even in the 19th century, we have to adapt it to the need to change continuously, for example, jobs. So the new educational system has not only been aiming at developing digital capabilities, and I should add ethical norms, but it also has to be based on a lifelong educational system.
When we look at the world today, we see governments and even business very much engaged in mastering the crisis of today, very much absorbed by crisis management. Right. But if you look into the future, there's so much going on in technology. Yeah. It's a real revolution, and our life, the pattern of governing societies will be so much affected with what's going on in research, in innovation. And we are not sufficiently prepared for it. Mm-hmm. Just look at the discussion on big data.
Yeah.
It shows how difficult it is to find the necessary rules, to find the necessary norms.
And look at things like artificial intelligence.
Exactly.
And robots. Look at things like gene editing.
Exactly.
You know, opening a whole new horizon for medical science.
And you see, the difference of this fourth industrial revolution is it doesn't change what you are doing. It changes you. If you take a genetic editing, just as an example, it's you who are changed. Yep. And of course, this has a big impact on your identity.
Yeah. And offers certain kinds of possibilities that have to be careful about. You know, when you began to do that kind of gene editing, some people worry that you are changing what it means to be human.
That's the problem. Of course, the new industrial revolution offers us many opportunities, but it raises manifold questions on the ethical, but even legal implications. And we have to be prepared for it. And that's what we want to do in Davos next year.
This is also going to affect the whole national security arena.
Yeah, if we look at, let's say, fighting robots, if we look at so many technologies, and it's a big change with the past is what we call now asymmetry, which means with very small means you can do very great damage.
Asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah.
Comment nous traitons aussi les dangers qui sont liés au progrès technologique?
Chacun peut commander, pourra commander votre livre sur Internet. Il y a toutes sortes d'exemples étonnants. Le téléphone portable, c'est l'objet fétiche. Tout le monde pour ça, la révolution technologique, c'est ça d'abord. Vous vous souvenez de votre premier téléphone portable?
Oui, ça fait à peu près 20 ans. Ouais. J'étais un des pionniers.
C'était encore les mots des grosses valises ou dans la
Exactement.
Voiture?
Exactement, et j'étais très fier.
Ouais. Aujourd'hui, au bout de ça, on parle de puces qu'on pourra s'implanter. Ce sera quand, ça?
Certainement dans les 10 années à venir. Et d'abord, on va les implanter dans nos vêtements, c'est-à-dire wearables, comme on le dit. Et après, on pourrait s'imaginer qu'on les implante dans nos cerveaux ou dans notre peau. Et à la fin, peut-être il y a une communication directe entre notre cerveau et le monde digital. Ce que nous voyons, c'est une sorte de fusion du monde physique, digital et biologique.
On appelle quelqu'un, on n'a même plus le réflexe de devoir prendre un appareil, ça se fait naturellement. Hein. La technique continue le corps.
Oui, vous parlez et vous dites, je veux maintenant être connecté avec n'importe qui. Hein? Et d'abord, vous avez les robots personnalisés. Et j'ai vu que M. Zuckerberg a prédit qu'à la fin de l'année, il va avoir son robot, son butler personnalisé qui est à sa disposition.
Donc, comme dans Downton Abbey, on aura son butler personnel, son serviteur, son esclave.
Oui, mais il y a une différence. C'est un serviteur qui, avec l'intelligence artificielle, apprend. Et qui n'est pas seulement votre assistant pour des travaux manuels, qui peut vraiment être un partenaire intellectuel de vous.
The world is so fast changing, so we have to integrate the knowledge, the expectations, the beliefs of the young generation into today's global decision-making processes. And this is the reason why the World Economic Forum has created, in addition to all its other communities, the community of young global leaders, leaders between 30 and 40 years old, and we have created what we call the Global Shapers Community. This is a community of potential leaders, some are already leaders, between 20 and 30 years old, and we have such a community today in over 400 cities in the world, and I'm very proud that we have one here in Chicago, which, by the way, is very active, and I would like to welcome particularly the Global Shapers here. Please raise your hands so that you are recognized. Excellent. In addition, we feel when we talk about the world of tomorrow and when we shape, as we say in the forum, the world of tomorrow, through multi-stakeholder dialogue, we have to integrate in a world which is so much dominated by fake news, we have to integrate the voice of the truth, which means academia, science, and I'm also proud that the World Economic Forum has a relationship with the University of Chicago. Actually, we have a community of 30 universities around the world working very closely with us and being engaged into our different activities. The fourth industrial revolution is not just a prolongation of this digitalization, it's much more. It's a combination of technologies. It's not just the digital technology. Just think of genetics, think of brain research and so on. And the power of the fourth industrial revolution comes from the combination of all those technologies. Actually, I was saying it's at the end what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities. So when I wrote the book, I started to write it four years ago. It was published 3 years ago. What is interesting is that 800,000 copies, more than 800,000 copies of those 2 million were sold in three countries alone, China, Japan, and South Korea. And you may be interested, who was the biggest buyer with 16,000 copies at the same time? It was the Korean military. Because the fourth industrial revolution will have a major impact also on warfare. So, see, when I wrote this book, I looked at all the different technologies, and then some of the reaction was, oh, that's science fiction, that's tomorrow. Now, if I look back in 3 years, how much the world has changed. And blockchain, I remember in Davos at our annual meeting 2 years ago, two and a half years ago, I organized a breakfast for financial ministers of finance and the head of central banks. And practically some experts had to explain what blockchain is. And today, you do not have a central bank which has not, let's say, a big research unit in this area. Bitcoins and so on have become a reality of our lives.
Our existing fragmented global architecture is not fit anymore for purpose in the 21st century. It's high time for a great reset. We need a great reset that will shape a much more resilient system for the post-corona era. One of the most striking and exciting transformations caused by the pandemic has been our transition to the digital of everything, both in our professional but also in our personal lives. It has come in a very short time, and technology has been central to the way we have collectively managed also the COVID-19 crisis. We all know, but still pay insufficient attention to the frightening scenario of a comprehensive cyber attack, which would bring to a complete halt to the power supply, transportation, hospital services, our society as a whole. The COVID-19 crisis would be seen in this respect as a small disturbance in comparison to a major cyber attack. Global and public-private cooperation is really critical to addressing our shared cybersecurity challenges. We are grateful for the long cooperation which the World Economic Forum has established with the Russian Federation, both with government but also with the business community. I wish to thank particularly Hermann Graf, CEO and Chairman of the Executive Board of Sberbank, and a committed partner of the World Economic Forum, and actually a member of its board of trustees, and a co-founder of the Center for Cybersecurity. It is remarkable how quickly
this goal has become so important around the world. 3 years ago, we initiated our Center for Cybersecurity at the World Economic Forum. We recognized already then the crucial importance of cybersecurity.
And now you want to see how quickly it's moving, how aggressive they are, and they're not hiding anything about what they intend for you. So listen up. This is not the future we're talking about now. This is right now as we speak. And here is Klaus Schwab's number one spokesperson. He is everywhere in the world. He is invited into all the capitals to talk. And here's what he's saying. Now, mind you, he's saying this now. This is not the future. Transhumanism, artificial intelligence, robotics, they're all going to be a part of your life, whether you like it or not.
We are probably one of the last generations of Homo sapiens, because in the coming generations, we will learn how to engineer bodies and brains and minds. Now, how exactly will the future masters of the planet look like? This will be decided by the people who own the data. Now, why is data so important? It's important because we've reached the point when we can hack not just computers, we can hack human beings and other organisms. Now, what do you need in order to hack a human being? You need two things. You need a lot of computing power, and you need a lot of data, especially biometric data. But control of data might enable human elites to do something even more radical than just build digital dictatorships. By hacking organisms, elites may gain the power to re-engineer the future of life itself. Because once you can hack something, you can usually also engineer it. All of life, for 4 billion years, dinosaurs, amoebas, tomatoes, humans, all of life was subject to the laws of natural selection and to the laws of organic biochemistry. But this is now about to change. Science is replacing evolution by natural selection with evolution by intelligent design. Not the intelligent design of some god above the clouds, but our intelligent design and the intelligent design of our clouds, the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, these are the new driving forces of evolution. And at the same time, science may enable life, after being confined for 4 billion years to the limited realm of organic compounds, science may enable life to break out into the inorganic realm.
Okay, so now you're going to be getting a different way of thinking, because you heard him say that for decades they tried to get into people's minds but couldn't. They didn't have the technology. Now they do, with artificial intelligence and transhumanism sciences. So now they can read your mind, they can change your thoughts, they can control what you think and how you react. Yeah, that's what the science is. And by the way, Elon Musk is a part of this. He is not your friend. You may think he's cool. He is not your friend. So, is anyone catching on to this in the media? Well, one person who seems to want to and has made some efforts is Kim Iverson. But she doesn't have the advantage yet. My hope is that people in this audience will share what I have shared with you, the actual clips, because then it's not hearsay. It's not, we don't know what these people really want from us. We don't know if they're really going to have a new world order, even though the President of the United States has mentioned that repeatedly. And all Presidents of the United States, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, George Bush Jr., Sr., have all talked about a new world order. It just wasn't capable of being done in their reign. Now it is. So, here's Kim Iverson, one of the most progressive and liberal of the journalists out there, popular program, and here's what she has to say.
Kim, what's on your radar?
Well, everyone is talking about a new world order. What does that even mean? What will the new world order look like? Who will control it? What has been touted as a right-wing conspiracy theory for the past few decades is now just loosely falling out of the mouths of global leaders everywhere. But before we get to the various world leaders touting a new world order, including Biden, Putin, Xi Jinping, the World Economic Forum, and others, let's talk about the people claiming it's a big conspiracy theory. The Anti-Defamation League categorizes the phrase New World Order under extremism, terrorism, and bigotry. They define it as, quote, a term used to refer to a right-wing conspiracy theory that became popular among anti-government extremists from the 1990s onwards. New World Order conspiracists believe that a tyrannical socialist one-world conspiracy has already taken over most of the planet and schemes to eliminate the last bastion of freedom, the United States, with the help of collaborators within the government. Through repressive measures, as well as manufactured crises such as terrorist attacks and pandemics, the globalist conspirators seek to eliminate dissent and to disarm Americans so that the New World Order can move in and enslave them. New World Order conspiracists also commonly believe that hundreds of concentration camps have been built in the U.S. ready to house dissenters, that the government will declare martial law, possibly on a pretext such as responding to a terrorist attack, and that the government will engage in mass gun confiscations. That sounds nuts, right? But if we rephrase it with fewer charged words, for example, let's replace tyrannical and socialist with authoritarian, change enslave with control, and swap out putting dissenters into concentration camps with something like silencing them on social media. It suddenly doesn't sound that insane. During the pandemic, many of us lost our freedoms. And in the recent era, we've seen dissenters put in jail, like Julian Assange and various protesters. Now, despite the ADL claiming the idea of a new world order as a conspiracy theory touted by conspiracy theorists, interestingly, numerous world leaders have been throwing the idea around. If you remember, just a few days ago, Biden was talking about a new world order forming. Here he is.
You know, we are at an inflection point, I believe, in the world economy, not just the world economy, in the world. It occurs every three or four generations. As one of the top military people said to me in a secure meeting the other day, 60 million people died between 1900 and 1946. And since then, we established a liberal world order, and that hadn't happened in a long while. A lot of people dying, but nowhere near the chaos. And now is a time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. We've got to unite the rest of the free world in doing it. So anyway.
Now, immediately, elite media rolled their collective eyes and said, oh, great, his innocent use of a phrase is just fodder for conspiracy theorists. Okay, maybe. But then, just these past few days, the World Government Summit convened in Dubai. It's a summit similar to the World Economic Forum. In fact, the two organizations are closely tied, and the key organizers are also members and young global leaders within the WEF. The two organizations are similar in that they both gather together the rich and the powerful to discuss the world's problems and how to solve them. This one is put on by a group of Emirati government officials. And this year's 2022 summit took on an eye-raising title.
And the title of this session, are we ready for a new world order?
Well, even Klaus Schwab ran a commercial at the summit touting a new world order. Take a look at this.
سرعة التغيير القادمة أكبر بكثير مما نتوقع.
I see a future where the internet is available for free for everyone. And that means the location of power is going to shift. Decentralization of power structures everywhere may be the beginning of that shift in finance, in political power.
We have to uphold our responsibility, which we have towards the next generation.
Okay, so now we have Joe Biden, Emirati leaders, and Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum all talking about the New World Order forming. What next? Well, it turns out The Chinese and the Russians have been talking about it as well. In fact, the two nations just got together yesterday and declared that they're building a new democratic world order together.
Okay, good. She at least has opened a door, as she did on many of the contradictions within the COVID narrative. And she was one of the first to do so. And by the way, Tucker Carlson on Friday night played a clip of Anthony Fauci, and like an exclusive, you know, you haven't seen this before, about saying that if you got the flu, then you didn't need the flu vaccine, that the best vaccine was naturally infecting, getting naturally infected, so that you were then naturally immunized. You had natural immunity. And by the way, the science actually supports that. Article after article after article shows that if you have an infection, then you're immune from that, and you have a natural immunity. The vaccine does not provide full immunity, and it has all of its side effects, as we're seeing now. So Tucker played a clip that Anthony Fauci, we played that at noon on my show. So we're getting, I don't know if his producers or someone else, maybe it's just coincidental that he gets the same information from some of the sources we do, but we looked deep for that. And we looked deep all weekend. I was spending watching clips. So that's just on the New World Order. All right? So it's here. Just be aware, almost everything they're doing politically, including a lot of what they're teaching in schools, a lot of their woke, they want everything done right now without any delay. Well, you can't change cultures. You can't change historical patterns of believing and living overnight, nor should you even try. Yet that's exactly what they're doing. It'll blow back on them. But there's something that also people said was a conspiracy theory. I'd heard it before about vaccine makers, the very same, many of the same vaccine makers that you've been taking their vaccines were experimenting first on children, poor children in the Philippines, in Mexico, in Africa. And now the latest, they were doing this also in places like Poland. But then it gets worse. They were taking babies as young as 3 to 6 months old and injecting them with experimental vaccines. And it was believed that these babies came from orphanages. That'd be horrific. I mean, what kind of person would even contemplate taking a child from an orphanage and then using him as if they were a lab rat? So it was conspiracy theory. And nobody could find the proof, independent proof. But we found it. Because we looked where no one had really looked. What you're about to see is startling.
Water, water everywhere, but is it safe to drink? Hi, this is Doug Wood from Green Street, the Environmental Health Show, and on Tuesday, Patty and I will talk with water expert Paul Trappas about the chemical toxins that may be in your water. Paul was one of the experts who helped the town of Hoosick Falls eliminate PFAS in their water, and you're going to want to tune in and hear what he has to say about countertop water filters. So if you drink water, why not join us on Green Street, Tuesday mornings at 11, only here on WBAI New York.
$10 a month. It's the price of a gigabyte of data for that iPad you never use. It's two overpriced coffees you ordered when you forgot to look at the menu. It's your overzealous attempts to meet the credit card minimum at the bodega on the corner. But $10 a month could be a lot more. Become a BAI buddy and commit to a recurring monthly donation to WBAI. This money will help us continue to broadcast the thoughts and perspectives of the progressive public. A BAI buddy is also not without perks. Your monthly contribution will earn you a WBAI tote bag and a member card offering Zipcar sales, discounted meals at select restaurants, and a handful of other benefits. You will also become a full voting member of WBAI, and our diverse programming will reflect your voice. Go to givetowbai.org and become a BAI buddy to support Free Speech Radio today.
Stay tuned for Leonard Lopate at Large coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It's now 1 p.m.